Did you see that?
That's a front.
Yeah.
All right, it's 1:10. We are reconvening our committee meeting. If y'all don't mind, and I don't think this will take very long, how about we take up the at-the-site vision comment from TCQ staff? Do we have any comments on it?
I think it's very good. It's extent to my comment.
I'll weigh in and say I concur. In fact, I struggle with the double negative in 17.6 particularly. So I'm glad to see that you split it out in another subsection. Any other comments? I think we're good. We don't have to vote on it or anything since they did what we asked them to. Thank you.
Thank you all.
All right, I guess we'll move back to our issue at hand. We're still talking about the cost analysis procedure. And if anybody from the public has any comments, now might be a good time, or if you want to wait, that's fine too. Yeah?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, David Hodges, excuse me, I apologize for reversing, but the item that you just addressed, are there any copies of anybody by chance?
Sure.
And what would be an opportunity to talk about?
Yeah, you're welcome to have this. Okay. I don't think there are any on the table, but I brought some for the committee. You have one? Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This was emailed to us Friday afternoon, so we'll stay on the subject. If you want to take a couple of minutes to review it, I'm okay with that.
If you need a little chubbing, then I'd say, Bob, this, you and I had a nice discussion about this where you were trying to help address the concerns I was expressing in that late night exchange that Cyrus was chiding me about. And I think this gets to what I was perceiving as a confusion issue very, very well. And I appreciate your help with them in getting that addressed.
Okay. Okay. And you'll notice on page one above the 17.2, that paragraph was specifically put in there to allow some flexibility as we go through the rulemaking process. There was a little concern by a couple of committee people that we are kind of moving kind of quickly through this. So the question was, would this be our last chance to comment on it? So that gives us a little opening there.
And that was something you and I discussed.
Right.
And just for, I guess, for the benefit of the audience, previous work tied the environmental benefit to the actions of the applicant and then qualified from there, whereas this ties the environmental benefit to the prevention, monitoring, control, reduction of air, water, and land pollution straight out of the statute. I think that's a very good clarifying way of doing it.
Any other comments on this? And I'll be glad to, if you want to chew on a little bit, and we'll, or if you want to now, it's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, David Hodgins from Houston. We may need a chance to review and just try to consult, but for one of the things that would be of assistance is, as y'all have done today and several times, is an illustration with this language that's newly revised. And we'll take, I guess, what's been hotly debated, and if you take just hypothetically, a hydrotreater, let's say, just out of the blue, as an example, how would that, an investment of $100 million or whatever in a company, how would that apply to this rule? an illustration. Thank you.
I think that issue was on our minds when we discussed this, and I'd say it doesn't qualify. And again, this is our advice. I want to clarify that we are not making a rule change. This is our advice.
We fully understand that you're serving as advisory committee. And I think it's just we're seeing rules, and we're just trying to apply it to lots of different illustrations. Obviously, the advisory committee has an intent for clarification. I think people support that and thank the work to get there. Yeah, the language has a way of having lots of applications or interpretations from different folks. And as the advisory committee, who is making advice and a recommendation to the commission, we're trying to understand, with the revised language, how it applies in different circumstances from y'all's perspective.
Okay.
And so, how to treat there may be some others, but that's the easiest one that came to mind because of all the controversy and things.
This addressed the end product issue. So that
I'd point you to into this draft, the 17.61C.
Okay, page 2.
And this is 3 things that can make you ineligible for exemption from taxation.
So it's not entitled to exemption from taxation for see the environmental benefit is derived from the use of the good or service product. Correct, that's what you're referencing, Mr. Lee? And in the concept of fuel or additives or things to do to affect fuel, is driving.
The fuel they produced is an end product, and the end products
are not eligible.
All right.
Environmental benefit is now the control of pollution. I'm paraphrasing, right? There's more specific language. The control of pollution is derived from the use or characteristics of the good or service produced or provided. So that would make that. I think in my analysis is that makes hydrotreater per se ineligible if the application is based upon a regulation related to the fuel.
Okay.
Characteristics of the fuel.
That's what it appears.
There may be components of a hydrotreater that make hydrotreating a cleaner process
in and of itself.
And those things may be exempt.
Sir, I didn't catch your name.
Thank you for clarification.
Thank you.
I didn't catch your name?
David Hodgins.
David
Hodgins. Just trying to understand.
Okay. And just as a little background, we added environmental benefit as a new definition because it was in the flowcharts, both flowcharts,
yes.
And it was not defined anywhere. And we thought it was easier to add a definition of environmental benefit. The alternative would have been to revise the flowchart. There were 2 flowchart definitions. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I don't think that this is going to apply to any applications that have been filed prior to this under the old rule. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
In fact, the law talks about this advisory committee only in effect after September 1st, 2009. The law says something to that effect. I'll have to look at it again, but I'm speaking from memory.
Yeah, anything.
I think that's Roland's reference.
Well, anything in January 1 of 2009 and forward,
right,
is applicable to this.
And this would go through the standard rulemaking process if the commission elected to.
We're giving advice to the commission. The commission's going to publish rules.
And the register.
We'll all comment. Hopefully, this committee may have some comments on what is published. Everyone else, I know our association will have comments on what is published. And then the commission will adopt the right rules.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else have questions? We welcome those. All right. Again, we don't have to vote on this since they basically did what we asked. So thank you again to the TCEQ staff. All right, I think now it's time to hear from staff. They gave us a something's on my place when I came back from lunch, so thank you.
But this sheet here you have in front of you, if you look, I prefer look at the bottom, from the bottom, don't look at the top. Okay, the equation you have, if you look at this equation, the third equation, that's what we are using, currently using.
Number three?
Number three.
All right, would you, as requested earlier, if we can kind of go through the flow chart and each item before we get to this, do we want to go to that length, or just dwell on this formula? What's the will of the committee? Would you stay with this? Okay. I heard it mentioned earlier they want to go through each step. Okay.
All right. So if you look, you have below the table, you have capital cost new. And that capital cost new is in that equation there and that equation there. And the what we did was there were two equipment in the application. Oh, no, three. The one of the equipment, you know, either does not qualify, they don't have information on it. If you add the whole thing, the capital cost new will be $936,181. That will be the capital cost new. Then on the equation you have capital cost old. If you look below that, you see capital cost old there. So after you have your capital cost old, then you have your byproduct. The byproduct is a function of your time and the interest rate.
Can we back up a second? What is the capital cost old calculated from? Is it?
No, it's given to us. The applicant provide that information to us.
Is it replacing something the way, assuming it's not legal now to have that sort of product, is it? The cost at the time that it was legal, or how do you factor that?
Well, I think it's the cost that you provide the one that you are replacing, or the comparable equipment to that you are equipment, the cost of that.
If you're replacing something, that's the cost that it could have been 20 years ago?
Yeah,
that's your original investment. So you're not comparing today's dollars to today's dollars. It's you lose inflation.
We try to compare today's dollar versus today's dollar if we catch that as much as we can.
Can you give us the context? We're talking about some sort of styrene recovery unit that then's selling it for a product into another. What is this that we're looking at?
Yeah, it's recovering. I do not have a full reason, and I don't want to speculate.
Okay.
If I remember, where it's recovering a product, that stuff, whatever.
It's recovering a chemical that's dangerous, but they can take that and sell it to somebody else.
What we know is the product that they are selling.
Okay.
And if you look on there, you can see that a pound they produce per year is 31,400. If you look below there, you see that you're using a styrene recovery. And they are recovering 31,400 per year. And then we have, you are asking about the price, how we get the price. In this case, it's 3-year average sales price, which is $0.59 per pound. So if you multiply that by 31,400 pounds, you get $18,463. Then you take that...
How did you arrive at the interest rate of a 3.25%?
The freight? What are you looking at? The interest rate you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah, the interest rate, I think we use, help me out.
Is this the application?
It's published. This is published.
Is it a producer's product? Producer's price index? Something like that, or
yeah, we use It depends on the individual. They will give us how they got it. Individual market, they will quantify where they get it from and all that. But, and you go and check it from there.
But it looks like it's used as a discount rate.
Hmm?
It's using
as a discount rate, yeah. You can call it discount rate or interest rate, yeah.
This is not a direct cap, because up at the top where all the numbers are going through, it looks like they discounted it over a number of years to come up with that. So your cost of capital is your 3.25%.
Well, the interest rate, or if you use the interest rate, is 3.25%.
Is this the T?
Where the interest rate is.
The problem is, where do you get the interest rate? Is it a cost of capital rate, or is it an inflation rate?
Oh, to tell you the truth, I think we depend on the customer to provide this information, and
Is this an actual calculation sheet from an applicant?
Okay, let me give you here. It said the current prime lending rate. Okay, that is the rate on corporate loan posted by at least 75% of nation's 30 largest bank.
Is that their debt?
In effect, at the time the application is submitted. The prime lending rate is posted daily in the Wall Street Journal and at many websites about finance or investing.
So we don't know if that's pre-tax or after-tax. We don't know if it ties to the industry or if it's just a safe rate of the dollar.
That's just the cost. That's the prime rate is all it is.
And I don't want to spend all of our time on this, but obviously the lower the rate, the higher the value. And this seems like just a no-risk basic rate.
This would be the same as cash in the bank.
Yeah, you can call it like a simple discount rate.
Okay. All right, I've got a better.
Okay.
We can discuss whether it's appropriate or not later. But
and if you don't, you can. All right, let's go on there. So we plug that in there into your byproduct, and the byproduct is the summation of byproduct value minus the storage and transportation over 1 plus interest rate raised to power t. In this case, it will be 30 years. And the table you have is the average annual rate, which is 18,000.
Mm-hmm. So the average sales price is your net operating income, or is that a gross sales price?
It's a gross sales price.
So it doesn't adjust for all the expenses that you incurred to have a net income?
No. That's what we're about to talk about now. So if you look at below there, the byproduct, you have your byproduct minus storage and transportation in this equation. So in this equation 3, they allow you to deduct the cost of your storage and transportation.
Manuel, what if you just have a basic cost associated with trying to recover these items? In other words, the new installation costs more to operate than the equipment that you replaced. Where does that come into the equation? It just doesn't seem appropriate to me to count the value of what you're reclaiming without any associated cost.
What we have now currently, what we are talking about, is what is in our rule right now. That's what we have now.
Okay.
And that's how we are operating an issuing application right now, a processing application now.
Okay.
So this is not a new one we are proposing. This is the old one. I'm going over with you.
So it's just storage and transportation costs, not the cost to operate. That's
all right.
Okay.
So in order to calculate that, we use a spreadsheet, and in this case, your product value is calculated by summing it, and the second one is your factor. Your factor is that interest rate below it, 1 plus interest rate raised to power 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, all the way to 30, and sum them up. And that's what you got there. And you come out with, when you sum all everything up, it will come out with $350,463. So if you sum them up, then you take it back and plug them into the equation at the top. And minus them out, and subtract your capital cost owed minus this amount by product value and divide by your new equipment cost, which is $936. And you come out with 56% going through all that. Any question? Or do I go too fast?
No, now we want you to apply options 1 and 2 to the same.
Yeah.
In other words, option 1 wouldn't change it, right?
In this case, option, well, it would change because their option 1, we are talking about operating cost.
Okay, so it would change because you'd be...
Whereas the one here is storage and transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Is my memory incorrect, but I thought in the old equation that the byproduct value, didn't you subtract production cost out of that before you got to that?
No, this is where you subtract the storage and transportation cost. So this equation I have now, if you, I don't know whether, yeah, that's exactly from our regulation rule.
Wayne, that was John's point.
I understand that, but I think there's a missing equation. I thought there was an equation that defined byproduct that had a subtraction in it.
There's a net.
That this byproduct value is supposed to be a net value. And I don't have a copy of the old...
It wouldn't surprise me if that's the way it's calculated, like you're saying, because most of us would look at what the net value
is. Well, I remember doing that when I...
Page 7 of the guidelines, 7 of 56 of the existing guidelines, isn't it?
That's option 1. Not, we're talking about...
Talking about option 3.
We're
talking
about the one currently in use.
Now it's just transportation storage in the country.
When I've done this before, I've actually done that other calculation, but I thought it was like on another page of the manual that there was a subtraction to come up with what byproduct value is.
I think you're actually doing a net present value. If you look at option 1, the only thing we're changing is of marketable product. And your formula here calls for net present value of the marketable product. That's what you're doing back here in your calculation here, too. I think you're netting it out.
Yeah.
Netting it up all costs.
So, you know, I mean, it's not important now.
But I think what Emmanuel's saying is that this example is exactly what the TCEQ is doing right now with their cap equation.
Is this the example of a is this equipment a styrene decanter and a vacuum condenser? Is that a purely pollution control device apart from the byproduct issue, or are we trying to get at a mixed?
I believe that was applied because it has a pollution aspect to it. But I don't have application with me here to have the description of it to tell you about.
So, but this process is designed to help us when we have a mixed-use piece of equipment. It's got productive and pollution control aspects to it, correct?
That's correct.
And what we're led to believe here is that if it weren't for the pollution control aspect, you could still buy one of these for $63,000. But what I'm getting at is if...
No, that's incorrect.
That's not correct.
It's old from the original cost.
It's $936,181.
with the required pollution control in it.
No, that appears to be the decanter and condenser. That's what it's cost for just those components. It appears that this is a partial percentage calculation just on these additional components that this applicant okay.
That's
is
what I was wondering.
For.
This isn't the whole facility or process.
This this is an add-on. When I look at this here,
and the old is just an add-on, or is it the whole facility? Is it a comparison of an add-on to an add-on, new and old?
I would suspect that this is a classic example of something that this applicant might have been sending to a flare and incinerating. So he may have a flare line, et cetera, and he's putting in this recovery, or he or she's putting in this recovery system rather than burn it, is what it, I mean, I think that could be assumed from this.
So part of the project probably has some tier one, and this is only the tier three part of it.
I would say this is tier three because they're recovering the material and with the definitions.
That's correct.
Okay.
Because it's recovering a product.
So what is represented by the capital cost old in this example?
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
What?
The...
What?
I guess, like, I think in this case...
Capital cost old looks like it's representing whatever their old equipment is.
That they took out.
That they took out because they were sending this to some other...
It's flare, you're saying, then?
I can't hear you.
If I remember correctly, the way it was presented, that the emission was going out, were venting to the atmosphere or to the flare, you like what you said, literally said, and now they are, you know, recapturing that, condensing it, as a and they are selling it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get back to what does this capital cost old of $63,000, what is that representing?
In this case, during the whole project, if you look at the whole project, the decanter, the condenser, they work as integrated unit. Maybe they have a decanter there before, mm-hmm. and they just let it go to the flare. And now they have condenser, and they are recovering that.
So it's whatever these current costs, new costs, are replacing.
Yeah, in other words, you know, it's not a fix, it's the what are you doing with it? Is the process, what are you doing with, in order to control pollution? Before, maybe you let your pollution go to the flare, now your pollution is being recovered or vented to the atmosphere. What changes did you make? That is the question we need to focus right on, the equipment itself.
I'd like to add, this is really a costly project. I mean, it's small. It's only $936,000, but... This 56% use to term or partial percentage, to me, is a little low. I mean, that's the way the calculation works out. But this particular applicant spent a lot of money, and he's the company's still going to be paying taxes on 44% of this spending, which it's going to cost them $9,000 a year potentially on property taxes, and it just strikes me as too low of percentage the way this calculation works out. I think the applicant should have a higher percentage.
And what he's talking about there is, I mean, it's very subjective when you're looking at the interest rate. It depends on the cost of capital of the industry in which they serve. So that number can go all over the board from 15%. To whatever 9, 10, whatever the cost of capital would have. And then let's say your cost new and your cost old are good numbers. Just leave those out and say that your average sales price, you know, that's a consistent sell price for how many years?
30 years.
You know, that's, you know, you're not trending it or, you know, escalating or trending it down, and that just makes assumption basically into perpetuity. You haven't tax affected it because they have to pay income taxes on that. So you're going to cut that by 30%. And if you get a bigger interest rate in there, it could produce a whole different answer is what I'm saying. I think.
Well, understand, but we, I think based on what we have now, this is the way it was, and because the applicant provided all the information required here, and he calculated, we calculated it, and we all agree on.
Right. I would point out that their option one that they're looking at is better than this because it should come out better because toward the applicant because they're subtracting the cost to produce. And personally, I think 30 years for something like this is long. Quite frankly, I think the only thing you would want to put that kind of length on would be a power plant, a major component that is not supposed.
And this gets back to valuation issues, right?
Well, or whether the thing would last that long, why would you, you know, I'm not sure, whatever this equipment, you should run it out further than what you think the life is going to be, and 30 years seems wrong.
I think this just reinforces how subjective the calculations are, because all of us that are commenting here are looking at it and going, whoa, that's
And I'm sort of in agreement with something you pulled out, which is the interest rate. Using prime rate.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be the cost of capital of the industry, and then if you load your cap rate, you tax affect your cap rate.
Yeah.
For all of the, I mean, there's a, it's just valuation.
Debt only, if you had debt and equity rates, which is cost of capital, that gets it up higher.
Although this isn't cost of capital, this is, this, well, I guess, this is the product.
The product valuation.
Yes, product valuation, not the cost of capital for installing. But it should be not necessarily prime rate, but what you think inflation is going to be.
Yeah, but the income is associated with the equipment, just like you're doing any other.
No, but the income, you're coming up with what the income is. You're not valuing the property. You're not valuing.
You're trying to come to $350,000 with the value of the product over the life of the asset is what they've done.
Well, I know that, but if you're going to use this as a standalone unit and you were to go buy this and you'd say, here's my income stream for this piece of equipment, that's what you'd be looking at. And so you'd make that equipment, the income stream, it'd be an income approach, and you would equate that to a business valuation to whether you would buy that for the income producibility of that piece of equipment, right?
I don't think that's what they're doing. I think they're trying to strictly value the byproduct over the life of the piece of equipment.
I have to think about this because this is
but
more
if
like...
But if your product is the marketable product, then it's taking it from a micro to a macro or vice versa where you do an income analysis, it's just a bunch of equipment that you're valuing to the income producibility of that equipment, whether that is the aggregate of one piece or aggregate of 1,000 pieces.
Product and facility would receive two different rates. As an example, if you're discounting the value of, say, gas sitting in a stored salt cavern, it's the cost of money plus a little bit of liquidation is all you would use, and the facility would be a higher rate than that. So product and facility, excuse me, should not necessarily have exactly the same rate.
Yeah, I know, but when you do it, like if you value a refinery, and you're using an income analysis, you're valuing the product, the quantity of product on an annualized basis coming out as your profit less expenses, and then you're hitting back by appropriate discount rate to determine an overall business valuation of a refinery if you're going to use an income analysis. And so you're valuing the product, what it would sell in the marketplace, marketable product, for all those pieces of equipment, because that's what generates the revenue. Just like this piece of equipment here, it generates a revenue because you're assuming that this byproduct has a sales price. It's no different. It's just the size and what it does. You're saying a marketable product is a marketable product.
I have to think about it a bit.
I got one more question. Now, we've decided that the capital cost old is this burner. It's the older piece of equipment. But is the price that the applicant paid 10 years ago, or is it the price that old equipment would be now on the market?
It's my understanding it's the old cost.
If that's the case, haven't we lost an inflation adjustment? Isn't he getting...
I don't think that's clear.
Is it? Okay.
It has to be the new cost, otherwise we're missing out on an inflation factor that's not fair to the...
As I mentioned earlier, today's the dollar value.
Today's dollar.
At the time of the calculation.
Okay. It'd be as if you're trying to buy the old stuff on the market today.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good clarification. Thanks from the audience. Page 18. Let's say, what is the cost of a new piece of equipment? What's the cost of the comparable equipment? So it does seem to apply to the new.
Because if they put on there what they paid for it 30 years ago, that's not fair, because then there's no inflation adjustment.
You'd be measuring historical dollars to current dollars.
Right.
All right, this is enlightening a bit. We see what goes through your process, gives us something to think about. Now, what we do with it now, I don't know if we can decide today what we're going to do with this. Welcome.
Again, I don't know if there's any way to apply the same example and say option one would essentially be the same, except you'd be subtracting a little bit more operating costs. But option two, which I'm trying to scroll on a piece of paper here, I'm not quite sure what would be the result if you were to apply option two. Even if you can just do your best guess.
If you notice that option two is almost the same as option one, the only difference, you don't have a capital cost or subtraction and all that at the top. It will be equivalent to what we call a return on investment type analysis that you try to do. You do that for each equipment and compare two of them together. In other words, how much will be my rate of return on investment for one equipment that is non-pollution control, and you do a rate of return on investment for one with pollution control and compare both of them, that kind of thing. That's what that number two is look like, but it's the same variable. But again, like I keep on saying, we list all these things for you all to look at it to see what we are thinking about. We haven't given a very deep thought into it and analyze it and all that kind of thing. We just make it available to you to see what we are looking at.
But on option two, you're taking, you're basically comparing, it's a ratio of the old, of the new over the old, basically.
That's correct, yeah.
You're taking, rather than an additive annual amount, right, you're taking, when you say annual marketable product value, are you averaging
that
over the life?
Well, the difference between the first and the second one was that the first one is a present net value. You're using a present net value. Whereas this one, you are using the average even distribution over the years, over each year, over the year, and average.
Okay, over the 30 years that you're going to be selling this product?
You are using your discount or amortization to say how much, okay, if you get a loan of $2,000 and you want to pay that loan, they are paying that loan for 5 years, you have amortization ratio that you have, you multiply by it, calculate it, and you tell you how much you are going to pay that loan per year.
Okay, I'm too simple a man to understand all that. But so on the example you gave us, would you say your annual marketable product value would be $18,463 because you think you're going to be selling it for that amount over?
Yeah, you take that 18% there, instead of using that, then you take your 936 and multiply it by your factor, your annual factor, to calculate your annual payback. And that's what that at the bottom is.
Okay.
Because instead of using the factor for accumulating your byproduct, you are discounting your capital cost in this case now.
As I look to these options, it continually comes in the back of my mind of what's a reasonable determination or allocation versus not making it too difficult for applicants. I'm kind of wrestling with that. And how can we make it useful and appropriate, but not making it too difficult? See what I'm saying? And I don't know, and your option three is certainly easier, but as we've said, it doesn't fit all. So that, I feel like we're kind of talking in a circle in a way, because it's good to air all these concerns and have a lot of questions, but at the end, I'm wondering, where are we now? Are we any closer to having any discussion,
I'll tell you what I feel. I think we all disagree or are concerned about how byproduct, whether it ought to be in the equation or not. But I don't have any feel for whether one, two, or three, absent that issue, is one is better than the other. I don't know if y'all do either. It just, I think staff will have a better...
Yeah, I haven't put a pencil to it, you know, to exactly what Cyrus was talking about, you know, weighing it out and seeing what it means, you know, at the end of the day.
I mean, in the end, I don't see much difference between one and current, except that it goes the opposite of what I think Mike likes. I mean, Mike, I think you would narrow the byproduct provision, and one expands the byproduct definition or provision. Is that right? Do you agree with me at least on assessment of what is proposed?
It could, although I think we could fix the problem with the words of the definition. So I don't think the equation presupposes that.
As Wayne said, one has production cost in it. It's the current. Model 3 does not. That's a significant difference, I think.
Yeah. Number one is not perfect. I guess we could see that from the debate we had, because I mean, it just doesn't pass the appearance test when you look at the numbers. This applicant, I think, should be having a higher percentage. But that said, it's a workable calculation, number one. If that's the one you use, it's consistent where it's applicable.
One or three?
Three. I'm talking about one.
Well, but the example he gave us is three.
Yeah, they haven't used one.
And three is the current calculation.
I'm sorry.
One would increase the exempt percentage, the way I understand it, from what Wayne said.
Correct.
Okay, I'm looking at that. I agree with what you're saying there. I'm looking at the byproduct or net present value. As long as we agree on what the definition of those one or two are going to be, it's essentially the same calculation, except for that variable, right?
Correct. And of course, the other huge item in my mind is, what's the discount rate? That affects the value significantly.
In the case of this example, the applicant provided that from the industry that they're in, evidently. And I mean, there's some choice.
No, it's in the rules.
Did you create that? This example is a real page out of somebody's application, right? You got that?
Yeah, it's a real application.
Okay. But I'm not saying they did right or wrong. I'm just saying the applicant has to provide it.
All the information we used came from the applicant.
No, I thought the discount rate was just the prime rate.
Right. Yes.
He didn't get to provide his own interest rate. That would be kind of strange, wouldn't it?
The 3.25% was something you told them to use?
It's something they provide for us. Based on my query, correct me if I'm wrong, this 3.325 has not been changed for a while, at least for three years.
Hmm. Want to comment on that?
In its prime?
Okay.
And the other issue on option one, again, when we say capital cost old, it might be not the old equipment, it might be the comparable equipment without that feature in it. Is that understood in the definition?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. That's what we're, yeah.
The discount rate. The reason we used the prime value was back in 99 when we did the equation, the issue was making it simple enough for anybody to pick up the equation and use it. And that's a published number. It's easy to find, easy for everyone to understand and to use. And that, I mean, it's the Wall Street Journal version of the discount rate, or the prime rate. I mean, you look it up online, and it's been the same for several years. In fact, it hasn't changed. But it was for ease. That was what we were directed at doing that time, was making an easy equation, as Bob was saying, that anybody could pick up and calculate and always get the same answer.
Ron, I understand that, and I think it is easy, but there are a lot of publications like Value Line and others that publish industry-specific rates of return.
And we understand that.
So I think that would be something we would want
to look at. The issue was writing it into the rule.
Right.
And it was a lot simpler to write one number into the rule saying, find it here, this is how you do it, than it was to say, whatever industry you're in, look at whatever rate. And in there, within the industries, I guess there's different valuation systems that could provide different rates.
We argue about these rates every year.
I know. And we do. And this is something we've argued in the equation.
And
probably
I know,
from the start.
And I'll just
it's
comment.
The operating cost deal is, do you count it or do you not? Leo was probably right. A lot of people, when they do their calculation, probably do count operating costs within that number that they present to us. They just don't tell us it's there. All we see is the storage and transportation number as a separate number, because that's what we ask for.
I won't continue on this other than the comment that a low, basically no risk rate implies assurance, or almost assurance, that you're going to get this income stream.
Yes.
And we know that not to be the case in most industries.
Right.
That's all my point, and why the rate should be higher.
This application is the only one that's ever gone for 30 years. We hadn't seen anybody do that before. Normally it's 10 to 15. But they supply the information. That's what the rule says. And we use the information they supply.
The interesting thing about this, if you go through the calculations, the more years that you include, the lower the percentage of exemption.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you drop this 20 years, your determination would be about 65%.
But if you increase the discount rate significantly, you wouldn't have, at the end of, say, 30 years, that NPV is 40% roughly of the
right
of the stream. I mean, you never see that in reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's what jumped out at me. 7,000 divided by 18.4. So anyway,
well, if you're tax affected, it just goes on.
Would it therefore be that option two, where you have an annual marketable product value, would get around this problem of how many years you choose to? No, it's still going to be the same issue.
Yeah, I think it gets back to what we were saying earlier about this is a valuation issue, and depending on the year that you choose and the facts that you have, can make this vary widely on what answer you want. And that's just the nature of the game.
But by the same token, if the value of the byproduct fluctuates greatly year by year, they could be getting basically a 90% exemption or a 56% exemption. It's going to go up and down. Right.
Okay, have we beat this enough for today? anything else from the audience that anybody else wants to comment on this part of it?
Did we ever get clarification on whether TCEQ could provide us with a couple other examples, but giving us option 1, 2, and 3 on something like the Herzogs? Not necessarily today, but even through email. Did we want them to do that, or what was our...
Can you... Is that attainable to get Herzogs? Or...
Just like the example we just gave you, you know that we got that data from an applicant. This case, not like operating costs, we have no way of getting the operating cost or the value of a product. And if we make it up, we don't know how realistic it's going to be, unless you all will be willing to send us, we'll be willing to calculate it if you, because some of you are in the industry and you all do evaluation and all that. You may have the data to send to us. We'll be willing to do that if you send us the data.
Well, he has a good point, Cyrus. I think it'd be a lot of speculation if he tried to...
Well, I was about to say you could do one using EIA data for operating cost and plug in the current gas price and the current electric price. And I mean...
Or maybe, Wayne, if you want to do it for, you know, just give us some examples. But
well, I could generate the base data and let everybody make their own calculations, since somebody might not be trusting what I come up with when I calculate it. But
let me ask a clarification. So this came from is it an application that's already been ruled on and no appeals pending?
Yeah, there's no appeal pending on that.
There is an appeal.
No appeal.
Okay, so it's a done deal.
Yes.
So there are a couple examples of Herzigs that are done deals. They're not subject to pending appeal, correct?
Yes.
So the same way we just picked out this piece of paper, to Cyrus's point, could not we walk through one of those unappealed final Herzig determinations and use that set of data as an example? I mean, we don't have to decide.
And then actually run it with the different options.
Right, and
to see
clarify
what,
that we don't have any decision-making authority. We're just trying to see.
But do you have the operating cost? You would not, would you?
No. I think that's a good point, because when they submitted this application, this operating cost and all that we are talking about is not part of it.
Right. So
it's not part of the current regulation.
Right. We can only run a couple of the options, not all of them.
I think you only want run one in addition to three, which is
right. It still would be constructive to do that on, and then have the experts speculate as to what, how you fill in that gap. Mm. At least we would have most of the variables nailed down. We're going to try to get an example. That's the way you get it.
Wayne, you want to just send out? I guess if you want to pull something from the EIA as far
well,
as capacity
I'll pull the table, and it shows you O&M cost, and I can come up with current fuel price and electric price,
spark spread, all that,
and so everybody would be using the same variables.
Yep.
And
then it's just a matter of plugging it in and see what it tells you.
I think it'll help for example purposes.
Okay,
that's fine. All right, do we want to go on to part B now? Because this is all kind of flowing together. Do we want to discuss B again?
Well, one little piece of homework that we need to do that hasn't been done yet is that it's funny how we can all sit in a room and a lot of us know way too much about this program, but Ron discovered or remembered at the end of our last meeting that list, the terminology that was in what I handed out, which we pulled from the last distributed copy back in the summer of 2007. Well, the history lesson was we all remembered that, oh yeah, that list was actually finalized, the description of the Part B items, but it just wasn't put in the rule, it was put in the guidelines. So that language actually exists in the guidance right now. And so what I need to do, and I will do by the next time we get together, is provide, and Ron and I kind of made a commitment to look at that, to see if there's any updates to the staff's guidance. I would just ask you all to look at the guidance and whatever page number it is that describes the Part B items. And my intention in that, in the update of my proposal, would be to integrate the benefits of what staff has used in the guidance, plus any other new information that we know that would be a better description, and obviously all ultimately subject to the commission agreeing that it would be helpful. But the same goal would be, you wouldn't see a variation of what I'm proposing in terms of the percentages, keeping them all at V except those few that I distributed last meeting where I was proposing 100%. But the language I will redistribute with the benefit of the guidance language.
If you handed that out last time, I never got it.
Okay, I'll make it really easy because it was really kind of a hand-scratched copy. I'm going to redo the whole thing so everybody will see it, and everybody will be looking, singing from the same song sheet. That'll happen before our next meeting.
So just to clarify, Mike, the words have already been changed in the guidance, but not the percentages right now are all still at V, and what you're proposing is to take a few of these categories that you think are clearly pollution control equipment and make them 100%? Is that...
On the second question, yes. Just making an adjustment on, I think it's one, two of the main items and three of the sub-items, so five total, switching from these to 100%. But on the language, the staff has guidance language that we may or may not believe needs to be updated. I think when we look at what I crafted and look at the guidance, there will be some agreement that we need to update some of that language. So I will provide a red line version that shows the way the guidance reads now with our proposed changes to that language. So it'll be simple for everybody. And then, obviously, the switches from V to 100% on those five items. So that whole concept of, for example, breaking out B15 into subgroups, that wasn't a novel concept that I dreamt up. It was, in fact, done by staff in the guidance. We just, none of us remembered it.
Yeah, and that begins on the bottom of page 9 of 56 in the September 2009 draft guidance.
Yeah, So whatever I submit is going to be that base language with any updates that we're proposing, shown as red line.
Okay, thanks, Mike. All right, any other rules discussion? I want to leave that kind of open. I've got it on the agenda just as a catch-all. The only old business that I knew of was to discuss the at-the-site issue. And any other old business want to talk about?
I had asked the question last meeting whether staff, based upon the proposed PVR and standard permit language for new oil and gas facilities, whether there would be any changes in terms of equipment required that we might anticipate now to be added to list A. I don't know if there will be. I just asked them if they would look at that. And I don't know if they've had a chance.
Yeah, I went to that stakeholders last week, and it's my understanding that there's some items under the A list that would, you know, that are already there that could be considered that rulemaking. Now, if there isn't, and we don't have the data for that, then we would just treat it as a tier three. And then once we are comfortable with the data that we're getting and it's consistent, then it could probably be moved over to the A, just like any other item that we didn't have the data for.
So you're not planning to add or delete anything as a result of that meeting you're referring to?
No.
Okay. Right, any new business? Any other comments from the public? We're winding down here. Any other new business? Oh, I would like, and you may be doing this now, if you don't mind reiterating for our benefit, sometimes reputation has to get in my head, where executive director staff is now in the rules process, and just reiterate to us where we're going the next few. Is your timeline still correct, I guess is what I'm saying?
Yeah, the timeline that we submitted to you two meetings ago still stands. Like I said, it's still in management review, and y'all are at liberty to meet whenever y'all would like, if it's before we propose or if it's after.
Can you still plan to submit or file to the Texas Register May 28th?
Correct.
That's still your plan. Okay.
Yeah. If we don't make that date, then it pushes the rule package to the next tax season.
Oh, so it goes to 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's their last adoption date. It's in December for the rule package. If we were to push it, it would move it to the next tax season.
Okay.
Also, I had just a friendly reminder. My travel coordinator just wanted to give y'all a reminder. I think there's a couple of you guys that are claiming travel. If anybody else plans to claim some travel, get that information to her as quickly as possible. We have some timelines regarding financial services that if y'all plan on getting reimbursed for your travel, go ahead and get that paperwork to her if you plan on it.
Okay. I don't know when we want to meet next. Go ahead.
I would think we'd want to meet again before it went to agenda. So,
and I know this is selfish, but I would, for those of us that are have a really, really heavy month this month, it would be good if we could wait until after May 1st. Is that?
Try August 1st.
I know. But it would help to be past the end of April. Okay.
And there's a period before it goes to agenda to where you would get to look at the draft rule language before it actually goes to agenda. And, you know, I predict that the commissioners would like to hear from the chairman on the rule before they propose.
As you know, I've reached out to all the commissioners just to let them know they're welcome to contact me, and I've not heard anything from anyone, but...
They would probably ask of the committee during that agenda their comments individually
during the public comments period. You mean public hearing
at the agenda before they adopt for publication?
Right.
So when would you be able to share with the committee a draft of what the commission will consider
once it gets filed with is it TR? Is it when we file?
So, I don't think
chief, when it gets fired with the chief clerk's office, no, which is about, I think, 2 to 3 weeks before it actually goes to agenda.
So you will allow us to see a draft?
Well, it's out in the public.
Okay.
It goes out. It gets posted on as a draft for the draft agenda.
This is great. This is an opportunity to provide input to, I think you're saying that the commission would welcome input from the advisory committee as they consider the draft to be published. That's great. I think we ought to time our meeting from after they make it available and before they meet so that we can speak about what they are considering to publish.
Yes.
So, Chancellor, you think
it could be an option, yes.
Did you say like 2 weeks before May 28th, something like that, 3 weeks?
Vince, do you have that timing? Yes. It would be available May 28th. It would be available May 28th.
May 28th is what he's saying.
The draft will be available there?
Yes, sir.
So we can be, we have a high degree of confidence in the availability of the draft for starting May 28th.
Yeah, that would be what the ED has submitted to the commissioners.
But if we want to have any impact or have hope of any impact on it, we need to provide something before May 28th, correct?
The commissioners would have liberty to make those recommendations at that agenda, any recommendation.
Okay, up until June 16th.
Well, yeah, it can be changed up to that date.
I think we have a window between May 28th and the meeting.
The agenda.
So we won't see it until May 28th. And we can write an advice and send it to the commissioners and to the staff for consideration up until the meeting date. Is that what you're saying?
It would be to the commissioners.
Don't send it to you, send it to the commissioners. I heard that.
So we're past our date to send to staff, which is April 1st, right? So now we're submitting advice to the commissioners.
We can talk offline
about this. All the I don't know, but
we can still, like we said, we can still. I think all the issues that y'all are talking about are open in the proposal. So I don't think that it would be hands off to talk about it during the adoption phase. It's just We were just stressing that if there's anything that we haven't pointed out or that's in the rule, then now is the time to make sure that it's discussed and put into the rule in order for us to have available comment in the adoption period.
That's very, very important. At the rate we go in this meeting, we should not wait to the last minute because we have some issues we're still working on here. But
all the issues you're discussing are already open up in the rule, so they will be able to be discussed in the adoption period, is what I'm saying.
But I'm thinking about discussion time for us to come to some kind of consensus on certain issues that we don't necessarily need to wait till after.
Right.
Forever.
So you're thinking we should probably meet somewhere after May 1st and somewhere after June 1st.
Something like that. Okay.
That would be helpful.
We really want to meet that often?
That would be helpful. I mean, during the management review, that it would give us an idea of where we're, what direction the committee is going.
Four sides that have to travel today.
Friday, June 4th. I would move that we meet again on Friday, June 4th.
How about we get school's out that day?
We can leave it pending for email discussion.
Yeah, let's do an email discussion.
Yeah, because I can't look at my calendar. Still aren't here.
Okay.
All right. We'll address that later, and we'll commit to those in the audience that we won't meet again in April. How's that?
Yeah.
But it'll be.
Or maybe in May.
Yeah, I think maybe May, and probably early June. Before the 16th. And by the way, for those who don't know, I believe this timeline is on your website, right? Okay. All right. Any other issues we need to discuss? All right. I think we're about worn down. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
All right. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. We're adjourned.